What's up, everybody? My name is Lee. Some of you guys might know me as Intuition, and you are tuned in to Kinda Neat. Thank you for tuning in, as always. First things first, we are doing a Patreon drive, a Patreon pledge drive to support the podcast so that we can keep it ad-free. So if you are a loyal podcast listener, as I always say, only if you're a loyal one. If you've been listening for a year, if you've been listening since the beginning, if you listen every week and this is part of your schedule, do me a favor and every month just like basically buy me the equivalent of a beer or a coffee. Go to patreon.com/kindaneat and pledge $1 per episode. That's it. We do 4 episodes a month on a good month, so that's $4 a month. I can tell you right now I had to subscribe to HBO Now because my ex finally changed her HBO Go password, and that's $14.99 a month. That's a lot compared to $4 a month. That's nothing. And we're independent. It's just me and Ben. We're not a big, giant conglomerate corporation. So go to patreon.com/kindaneat and pledge $1 per episode or $2 per episode or $3. That's fine. Don't pledge $10. Don't pledge $20 because it's not a one-time thing. It's every episode that we put out, we'll just take a little dollar from you, you know? And I keep having to email people that are donating extraneous amounts of money and going, hey, look, man, I think you're doing the Patreon wrong. It's not 10 bucks. It's just a dollar. I don't want to steal from you every month because I'm a nice person like that and I don't want to steal from people. That being said, apparently sometimes a lot of people think I'm a dick. I hear it kind of a lot. I don't mean to be a dick. In my head, I want to be a nice person. I think I'm a nice person. I don't know. But I also like to provoke people into like thinking a little bit. And I guess a lot of times I do it in maybe a crass way or a crude way, and people kind of lash out at me. I get a lot of people that have liked my music that then reach out to me on either a personal level or on the internet or whatever and end up then telling people that I'm a dick. And I hear it back from people because people talk. No one keeps secrets because actually people are dicks. And so, you know, I keep hearing from all these randoms like, oh, yeah, I used to like Intuition and then I ran into him, or like my friend had an encounter with him and said he was a real asshole. So I think he's a dick now. But just now during the podcast, like somebody was in my DMs on Twitter just fucking – we were talking back and forth about Drake. Like he was telling me that Drake sucks and that I'm a real rapper. And I went, I don't know, man. I was like, Drake's pretty awesome. And he's like, but you're honest. And I'm like, yeah, Drake's like excessively honest. That's like part of his thing, you know? And he's like, man, come on. Like songs like Started From the Bottom and No New Friends, you think those are honest? And I'm like, what? I'm like, do you really think that a lyric about me putting coke in Miley Cyrus's sinuses is honest? Like, you know. And so he sent me this long DM that goes, I hope you at least have the courtesy to back up your statements. Good music has passion and soul. If you can't tell that Drake is a flake, I don't even know what that means, then I have no idea how you make the music you do. Music is a reflection of self, whether you believe it or not. When you wrote Dear John, if you say you didn't have yourself in mind, I'd say you're pretentious. That's the first paragraph. You think Drake can rap? That's fine. But just remember, if you go platinum, it's got nothing to do with luck. It just means that a million people are stupid as fuck. And he's got that in quotes. I don't know where that's from. I really just didn't think you were one of them, especially because your music told me otherwise. It's funny. I can tell you assume I know nothing about music. Honestly, I've been such a big fan of yours, and you chose to be a dick when I was sharing my opinion while complimenting you at the same time. The fact that you stick up for Drake more than your own music speaks volumes to me as well. Anyway, thanks for the music you've given me. Answer if you have something to say. I'd love to hear it. That's coming from a positive place. And so I responded back, I'm not being a dick. I'm just trying to provoke you to look at it differently. Of course Dear John is about me, just like Marvin's Room is about Drake. But do you think I was honest when I said I put the coke in Miley Cyrus' sinuses? I already used that example in the podcast, sorry. The shit is not black and white, my man. There are gray areas. That being said, please stay out of my DMs if you feel the need to attack me or my sentiments. You're being very passionate about disliking someone's art, and that seems a little small-minded, in my opinion, in all caps. I have to deal with this kind of shit all the time. Man, people lash out. You know, I'm sorry that I like music that doesn't, you know, fit what you think I listen to. I have this feeling that a lot of people that listen to my music. And for those of you who are just tuning in on YouTube, I know I just started putting these episodes on YouTube, and so some of you have no idea that I rap or used to rap or whatever, or that I make music or have any sort of music following at all. But I get people that assume that I just must spend all day listening to music that sounds like the music they want to compartmentalize with me with. So they must think that I just like sit and listen to white rappers all day. And I don't. I listen to hardly any white rappers. I listen to stuff that most of you would mistakenly call ignorant music. I listen to what most of you would mistakenly refer to as trap music. I listen to all kinds of stuff. White rappers I don't listen to. And so I think a lot of people are so disappointed with that when they find out that they instantly just go, oh, well, you're a fucking dick because you're not what I thought you were. And that doesn't have anything to do with me. That has to do with them. If you can't listen to my music and realize that I'm a dick, then like you're not listening close enough. I pretty much spend all my time on my songs trying to push forward the fact that I think I'm a piece of shit. And I pretty openly dislike myself, and I'm trying to work through that constantly when I make music. I'm snide and snarky and just overall a real fucking asshole. And so if that doesn't come through when you're listening, I don't really know. Even if I do it in a sweet way, it's like I'm still taking jabs at myself. So yeah, my music's honest, but if you don't honestly think I'm a dick, I don't really know what to tell you. That being said, I always tell people online, if you approach someone with respect, they'll approach you with respect back. But if you come in like some weirdo know-it-all telling me how I'm supposed to think, then yeah, I'm probably going to be a dickhead. And today's guest, Johnny Polygon, we talk a lot about this sort of thing. We talk a lot about white rap fans. We talk a lot about my existential crisis I've been having of like being a white rapper and all the cultural appropriation that has been in the news and just kind of my inner debate with that. He partakes in it with me. And also we just talk about his ideas that he's been having with his like sleepover shows, and he's got a box set coming out. But realistically, when Johnny and I get together, we don't get to hang out that often in real life. And so we try to use these as an excuse to just kind of link back up and shoot the shit. Because he and I just really, I would say that he would probably say this as well. We enjoy talking to each other. We each enjoy each other's company, and we don't get to do it enough in real life. So we just record these. So realistically, we talk just a lot. Talk a lot of shop, and we talk a lot of. I don't know. I kind of blacked out and just had a good conversation with him. So hopefully, you guys enjoy it. Yeah. So it was nice to catch up with Johnny. This is his second time on Kinda Neat, and he also did an Oxstudy interview. So there are a bunch of conversations with us out there. If you just Google Johnny Polygon Kinda Neat, you'll be able to find his other episode because I know that the website is like fucking useless when it comes to that kind of shit. So yeah, without further ado, I'm going to get into my conversation with Johnny Polygon, and I probably come off like a dick in this sometimes too. I'm sorry. I don't want to be an asshole. It's just, I try to live my life well, but I'm only human, an honest, open piece of shit human. So here's Johnny Polygon. Thanks. Young Johnny Armor.
Hey.
Man.
Hey.
First, I want to apologize to you for always being a flake. I know that I'm a flake, and
it wouldn't be LA without it. It's part of your charm.
I know. Man.
You only flaked on me one time.
I know, but that felt like enough times.
It was a big flake.
What was it for? Some party.
I think it was a Ham Over Everything party.
Oh, Ham on Everything. Yeah.
And
No, I couldn't have been that because I would have been there.
It definitely was. Because you were saying, you were like, yo, these are my boys.
Oh, yeah. It was at Union. It was at Union. I was supposed to go to it. And then, sometimes I just get social anxiety. And,
really?
Yeah. And then I just don't go.
Huh.
You don't do that ever?
All the time.
Yeah. I have plans in my head where I'm like, all right, I'm going to go do this.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, it's 6 o'clock. Maybe I should take a little nap before I go so I can stay up later.
And then by the time you wake up, you're like, but I like being mostly sleep.
I wake up at 9 and I'm like, man, fuck this. I'm not going anywhere.
My favorite plans are canceled plans. So
those are my only plans lately. Yeah. I kind of feel bad. I'm in this weird place in my life where the only time I see my friends or people that I like is if I talk to them on here.
Right.
And so here you are.
It keeps it fresh.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, yeah, man, we should sit down and have a conversation, but, like, let's record it.
On my show.
Might as well kill two birds with one stone. We can catch up and fucking be cool, and then we can also make some content because what the fuck? We're going to talk about the same shit anyway. Might as well.
Which your show's doing well. Congratulations.
I guess. People tell me that. I don't know. Yeah. It's just when it's like, you know, when you look in the mirror every day, you can't tell if you're getting fat.
Exactly.
Until you see a picture of yourself 2 years ago.
Right.
And so I look at it
every
day.
You're like, holy fuck, I was in amazing shape 2
years
ago. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And so I don't know. If sometimes it feels like it's going good and sometimes it feels like I'm being a lazy piece of shit and it's not growing like it should. But people tell me they like it, so that's cool.
How many episodes are you doing a year now?
I should do 52 in a year, but I probably only do about 25 or 30 per year now.
Okay.
Which is not enough. But
really?
No.
That seems like a lot.
You should do one a week, I feel like, if you're doing a podcast. Okay. At least. Marin's out here doing 2 a week, bro. Some people do a podcast every day.
That's ridiculous.
I don't make enough revenue to work. Yeah, it wouldn't be worth my time. It wouldn't be worth my time to do that. But anyway.
Right.
Yeah, what have you been up to?
Man, I've actually been working on my own podcast.
You have a podcast now?
It's not out yet.
Yeah.
But it's coming. It's coming along with, I'm doing a box set of all my albums from when I first started when I was 16 to now where I'm going to be 32 in like 10 days or something.
Oh, happy early birthday.
Yeah, thank you.
What does that make you, a Taurus?
Yeah.
That's why we get along so good.
Is it?
I've this is the second podcast in a row I've talked about astrology, so I'm going to just skip over that. But yeah. Wait, what's your birthday?
May 15th.
Oh, no way. That's two of my best friends, both of their birthdays are on May 15th.
It's a good date. It's a good...
Yeah, I get along real well with people born on May 15th for some reason.
I think it's Janet Jackson's birthday, too, I think.
Shout out Janet Jackson. We'd be best friends, probably.
Hey, JJ. Hey.
That's tight. What are you going to do for your birthday?
I don't know. I think I'm just going to have a... Maybe a little kickback at my house.
Yeah.
You know, barbecue.
Are you a birthday person?
Nah, not really.
Me neither.
Not really.
You grew up kind of in the sticks, yeah?
Yeah. Well, I grew up in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
But were you like in... Is Tulsa a big city?
Yeah.
Like, were you in the city or were you in the suburbs?
Yeah, I was in the city.
Okay.
And I was... grew up downtown, which now downtown Tulsa is like where it's at. That's where... If you're going to visit, you have to go get some downtown Tulsa culture in your life. But when I was growing up, there was absolutely nothing. It was a ghost town.
Was it like ghost town, like a zombie town? Like downtown LA used to be a zombie town. Like the Skid Row was just the whole thing.
Right.
Was Tulsa like that?
It was sort of like that, but less like when I think of old school downtown LA, I think of almost like almost like Mad Max, or like, I just think of like barrels of fire and random screams in the distance and stuff.
Right, right. Like it looked like RoboCop.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of that one Van Damme movie, Universal Soldier?
Oh, yeah. I haven't thought of that in forever. What a great movie.
It's amazing. The dialogue alone.
You know that fucking Dolph Lundgren has a PhD or some shit?
I saw that.
That's crazy. He looks dumb as shit.
Even when I was looking at them say he has a PhD and he's really smart, I'm looking at him like, this dumb motherfucker? Like, look at his face. He looks stupid.
I'm like, that's the guy Rocky beat up. That's not. He doesn't have a PhD.
Right. That guy killed... Didn't he kill Apollo Creed?
He did. That piece of shit.
Actually, no, because that opened up the world for the new Creed.
Yeah.
They built a whole story around... Creed being killed by Dolph Lundgren.
Did you like the new Creed?
I did.
I loved it.
Yeah.
I thought it was great.
Yeah.
I always say, the way to tug on the heartstrings of an Italian man is put on a Rocky movie.
Right.
And Creed was no different.
Any man, I think it's been acceptable for men to cry about sports and get emotional about sports. So if you're going to make a movie
about sports,
yeah, then like dudes are going to be like, fuck yeah, I cried at Rocky. Fuck yeah, I cried at Creed. It's an amazing film.
It's
an amazing film.
I thought it was great. I love Ryan Coogler, the director of that.
Okay.
He did Fruitvale Station.
Have you seen that? Oh, so they're like him and Michael B. Jordan are...
I think they're like really close homies.
That's dope.
I think they might be homies from before Hollywood, right, but I'm not sure about that. Don't quote me.
Yeah.
But they make a great team.
Okay.
And maybe this is just like I'm telling you, but I'm telling everybody, like, there's this speech that Ryan Coogler did about diversity in Hollywood.
Yeah.
It's fucking dope. You got to go listen to him. Ryan Coogler is a real motherfucker.
On YouTube?
Yeah, it's on YouTube. If you just look up like Ryan Coogler diversity speech or whatever, it'll pop up.
Nice.
He's a smart dude. He's real young too. From Oakland.
Really?
Yeah. Just like a normal ass dude from Oakland.
Is he in
like
his 30s or 20s?
He's still in his 20s.
Fuck.
I think he made Fruitvale Station when he was 28 or something.
I'm happy for people who are successful in their 20s, but at the same time, I'm like,
what did I do wrong?
Yeah. I was like, what?
What did I do wrong?
What?
God damn it. Yeah.
Like, what? Not a... Shit.
Right. Yeah, fucking Dolph Lundgren. Anyway.
What's he like? He's like 60-something now,
he's
right?
Got to be up there.
He looks stupider and stupider every day.
Really?
Yeah. I think as he gets older, he's getting...
They're going to revoke his PhD?
Yeah. Just like, yeah, you look too dumb.
Right. So Tulsa looked like Universal Soldier, but now...
No. L.A. looked like Universal Soldier.
Oh, yeah, right. But Tulsa did not.
Looked like, I don't know, kind of like the Warner Brothers studio after everybody left for the day.
Okay.
You know, so picture like a prop downtown, like a fake downtown.
Yeah.
And then it's like shutdown time, like security guards are going home.
Right,
shit.
Like the sky at the end of the street is like a painting that you would just run into.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what it was like when I was growing up there. So
was it densely populated at that time downtown? Or was
at all.
Your family was just like the only family on the block or what?
Yeah. It's crazy to see, you know, because... I'm talking like 20 years ago now, when we first moved downtown. It's like what used to be a sketchy hood area is now they're selling like $500,000 condos and stuff, which in Tulsa prices is crazy.
And they got like artisanal cheese shops and shit.
All that. Yeah. All that. Coffee shops.
All the liquor gets served in like those, the mason jars, stuff like that.
Tulsa's got really strange liquor laws though.
Really?
Like Oklahoma does, yeah.
Really?
It's like there's half-powered beer, like 3.2 alcohol content in the beer, unless you buy it from a bar.
Huh.
Or a liquor store, but if it's full powered beer, they have to sell it warm, and then you have to take it home, and then
full all powered sort of beer.
Yeah, exactly. It's fucking very strange.
You should start a brand called Full Powered Beer.
I don't watch enough sports
that
for
shit's
that.
Tight.
Yeah.
Is Oklahoma diverse?
It's more diverse than people think. Like I know a lot of people who had never been there. They ask me, oh, there's black people there? And like, yeah, there's tons of black people.
I wouldn't wonder if there were black people, but I mean, it's just like, is there anything other than white and black, basically?
Yes, but not in the sense, not in the way that you'd see out here in New York or,
right,
you know, in places that have a big entertainment startup culture.
Does it
know?
Feel, is it feel Southern there? Or is it no, like Midwestern?
It feels, it's Midwest. Like no one there, like none of us call ourselves like Southern or like the South. We all say we're Midwest.
Okay. I was just in Iowa over the weekend.
Okay.
Which is the Midwest. And it was a really crazy experience because I don't think I've ever been like that deep in the Midwest.
Okay.
And we were in this restaurant at one point called Jethro's. Shout out to Jethro's. It's like some barbecue place. And their floor seating is one big room and it could probably fit about 100 people in it or so. And the first day that we were there, we had lunch and it was packed. And I looked over and I say to my friends, I'm like, dude, look at this restaurant. Like it's all white people. It was like 100,
yeah,
literally all white people.
Yeah.
The only dude, there was, we rolled the Samoan dude. He was the only like non-white in the whole place.
Right.
So we got to looking at like the Wikipedia page of their census,
mm-hmm,
and it's like Iowa's 92.8% white or something like that.
Whoa.
And like 2% black, and they don't even list like Latino or it's Hispanic. Just other? Yeah, it's just like other, and then there's like 0.1 Pacific Islander, and we're like, oh shit, they just changed the Wikipedia when you came in, AG. Like,
wow.
So yeah,
I wonder what the LGBT community, yeah, is like there.
I don't know. It seems very conservative there, and which, whatever, you know, it is what it is. But yeah, one of the gals that we end up photographing, she's like this really attractive, like all American looking model girl.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, oh, what's like, what are your parents like? What kind of European are you? And she's like, I'm just American. And I'm like, what do you mean? She's like, I think both sides of my family have been here since like the 1700s. And I was like, that's fucking crazy. I never met anybody like that.
That's crazy. She just made that up.
Maybe she might have.
Someone told her that, right? She's adopted.
She said, oh, my, like, I think my great, 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 great grandmother's Native American. I said, oh, then your great, 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 great grandfather was out here raping and pillaging. That's what that was.
As a white guy, do you notice when you're around a room of white, like white people?
Well, I think as an Angeleno, even though I'm a transplant, I've been here for so long that,
yeah,
when I am in a room full of only white people, I do notice it because, yeah, that doesn't happen here.
Right.
That just doesn't exist in Los Angeles. You'll never be any – I mean, at least me.
Yeah.
I'm not rich enough to where I'm ever going to be in a room full of white people in Los Angeles. Like, that's just
– right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Do you notice that kind of shit if you're the only black dude in a room?
Yeah. I mean, I grew up the only black dude in the room. You,
yeah,
know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and I definitely – well, it's like I said, like, where my parents were – where my family was kind of like a hood area,
mm-hmm,
but I went to a magnet school,
right?
Because I was like this, I used to be like this star swimmer or whatever.
Really?
Yeah.
You've told me that before, probably. And
it's so weird to think about.
Every time I hear it, I'd still be surprised.
Yeah, I've kept the physique.
I mean, you look buoyant.
Thank you.
You know, I used to be athletic too. Neither of us looked that way
anymore. Hey, man, no, man, I was like. That was like before my 20s.
It was a half life ago, really.
Yeah, really.
Yeah.
Really. That's who I used to be. But so.
That's why you went to the magnet school, though? Was for swimming, not for academics? Or was it because of both?
Definitely not academics.
Really?
Yeah. I like dropped out of high school. I was a horrible student and all that shit.
Yeah.
But so I saw Dave Chappelle talking about how like black people are bilingual, you know, like you have your. You have the way that you talk when you're around,
right?
You know,
what do they refer to that as? Your not codes. There's a specific term for that. I know exactly what you're talking about, though.
Go ahead.
Not codes. It's like you have your different. You know, everyone. It's just like ingrained in us as a society where we act differently depending on what kind of room we're
in.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. So, I feel like I was around white people during the day. And then I was around black people at night, and then during the day it was just all white people, you know. And even the magnet school was a diverse school, like it was a 50-50, like it was half black, half white, you know, and a couple different other races sprinkled in there. But I definitely feel like I know how to talk to both people, like with a cop, like I can pimp a cop,
right?
Real easy, like some fucking police, especially the more ignorant the police is, the easier it is for me to like blow his mind,
right?
You know,
right?
But,
interesting.
Yeah.
Do you get pulled over driving while black a lot or what?
Oh, definitely.
Really?
Especially on tour, man. Oh my god.
Oh, I can't even imagine.
Woo! On tour, especially, we did this tour. It was me, Shelly, and my homie Gabe and Pac Div, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it was like six black people in my bus, and we're just driving in South, I think it was South Carolina, South or North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And this cop pulled us over, and he didn't even really give us a reason why he pulled us over. And he was just convinced that there was something in the bus.
Right.
And we were pulled over for maybe like 2.5, like 2 hours.
2 hours?
Like he went through
everything.
Went through everything. He went through the air conditioning ducts and like all that shit. Never found it.
Wow.
We had it.
I just had a literal jaw drop. That's crazy.
He never said, found it. We had it.
He said we had it.
Like we had it.
He didn't check my air conditioning ducts.
No. No, we got this. I got this, you know. Yeah, we got this little stash spot or whatever.
Well, don't snitch on yourself. But that's crazy that he didn't find that. They didn't call out the dogs in 2 hours, for Christ's sakes.
No, there was dogs. I mean, we get dogs. I get pulled over in my bus all the time.
That's so crazy.
All the time.
You have, like, a Sprinter van?
No, it's a Fleetwood Limited. Oh. So it's like a Class A. It's got, like, bunks and...
Oh, you have a full-on bus. Where do you park that?
Yeah, it's in storage in Oklahoma right now.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah, out here to store it, it's like $300 a month, and then in Oklahoma, it's $40.
Oh, that seems like a better deal.
Boom.
Yeah, so then you just start your tours over in Oklahoma.
Yeah.
That's tight. How you tour a lot, huh?
I toured a lot last year. I haven't been touring that much this year just because it was the way I was touring was like punk rock tour.
How so?
You know what I mean? Because, I mean, I was doing, like, sleepover shows.
Yeah, I saw those. I was going to ask about that.
Yeah, we would, like, rent an Airbnb and just make, like, 10 tickets available. You know, 8 to 10 tickets available. And they're all kind of, like, higher price tickets. They're, like, $250 to $500 or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's, like, it's overnight, crazy house. We, like, cook, drink, watch movies, I perform, and then we wake up in the morning, and I was playing them the album that was out at the time, I Love You Goodnight.
Yeah.
And, yeah, that was the whole thing. It was like, the album was called I Love You Goodnight.
How is that? How'd you come up with that idea?
That was Shelly. That was my manager, girlfriend. She came up with all that stuff.
She just thought of that, and then what has it been like being in that close quarters with people that are willing to pay $250 to $500 to hang out with you?
Yeah, you know, it freaks some people out. I think the idea of it freaks some people out.
Yeah.
But for me, it's cool. It's people that give the biggest fuck about me.
Right.
You know what I mean? I'm just like, whoa, these people care so fucking much about me.
Right.
The least I can do is just like be a cool dude. And like, you know, we like smoke and drink and all that stuff. We did one in Vegas that was extra crazy, turned up, you know. And I haven't had a bad experience doing that. And I kind of doubt I will. But because the people who hate are like the creepos and shit. They're not going to put the money up to come and see you like that. And if they do, they don't want to come in and, like, ruin it. You know,
oh, see, I wouldn't be worried about, like, anybody that hates. I want to preface this by saying I love everybody that comes out and supports every show. But every once in a while, you get somebody that comes to a show, they end up too drunk.
Right.
And they don't realize, like, the social flow and interaction of things.
Yes.
And they want to, like, hog all the time at the merch booth and talk for, like, a half hour. And it's like, yo, man.
Right.
I'm sorry. I'm not trying to be rude, but we got to keep this moving. And then they just keep talking your ear off. And then
my personal thing is, like, the shortest conversation should be the one about how awesome you are.
Right. Because I don't want to hear that shit.
It's awkward to just take the compliment.
It's hard to take compliments, particularly when you hate yourself as much as I do. You know what I mean?
We're in the same boat.
Yeah, I don't want. I don't need your validation because it's not going to help my well-being at all. I'd rather skip to the normal guy shit.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
And I think that, like, there's a point in every sleepover show where the ice is broken.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So, like, literally, as soon as they start, that's when I get the performance, like, out of the way.
Yeah.
Because the more I, like, put it off, I'm just like, oh, do I want to perform for 6 people?
Right.
Like,
how weird is that? Is it good or is it bad?
It's great.
Yeah.
It's really fantastic, you know? And, like, the very first one we did was in Dallas, and we had, I want to say, 8 tickets available.
Uh-huh.
And I'm just like, yo, is anyone going to, like, buy this shit? Because we had already rented
the Airbnb.
Yeah, we already rented the house.
And it's like a mini mansion or something?
Yeah, like, this one, it had a theater, like a little home theater room. Oh. It had a pool.
Wow.
Had a barbecue. There was a space for us to park our bus and stuff. And so, like, the very first one, I'm just like, are people actually going to buy this? You know what I mean? It's like the tickets were like $275 to $400 that time for, like, the suite, you know?
And not only the price, that's also a very kind of, like, new idea. I've never heard of that. Like, when I saw you tweeting it, I'd never heard of it. And I went, this is something new. I wonder how that's going to work out.
Yeah.
And I'm sure even as a fan or follower ticket buyer, I'd be like, this is weird. How is this going to work?
Right. Right.
You know,
it was literally just imagine. It was almost like a camp or like a, just like a weekend getaway. And you're just like with a bunch of strangers who all like the same thing.
Was it all dudes?
No.
Really?
No, it was all couples.
Oh, it was couples came.
Yeah. Well, the first one was all couples.
Yeah.
The one in Vegas was all one group of friends.
Oh, that's tight.
Like, they bought it immediately.
They were fucking turnt, probably.
Oh, man. Vegas was super fun, man.
Yeah.
Super fun. And then one of...
Well, so keep telling me about the first one.
Oh, yeah. So, we get to the house, and I'm like... Well, before we got to the house, I'm wondering, are people going to buy this, you know? And then one kid bought it, and he was like, hey, I'm going to get my girlfriend a ticket, too. Okay, cool. And then we were like, wow, this is amazing. This is if only they buy it, then fine. You know, we'll kick it all night.
Right.
It'll be cool. And then the rest of the six tickets went, and we're like, okay, well, let's.
It's a thing now.
Yeah, let's do this. So I was like, went to the grocery store, got a bunch of wings and, you know, and fucking hot dogs and liquor. And so everyone was 21 and up. And yeah, that one was really, really, really fun. So the first thing I did was perform, and that was much harder for me than a show.
Oh yeah, playing in an empty room, or you know, even playing in a living room where there's only a few people it's much more vulnerable.
Yeah, it's like what do you do with your eyes? Like, what do you look at?
Right.
You know what I mean?
People always ask about, like, oh, isn't it weird to be on stage in front of that many people? Or when I tell people that I get, like, kind of social anxiety, they're like, you're on stage in front of a bunch of people. I'm like, isn't it so much easier to be on stage in front of a bunch of people than it is to be in front of zero people?
I think that a big group of people is collectively, like, one stupid person.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
You've heard that adage, like, a person is smart and people are stupid.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Right.
Yeah. So, like, a big group of people, you could be like, put your hands up. And they'll be like, ugh.
Right, exactly.
You know what I mean?
Right.
But three people,
They're all looking around at each other like, should I do that?
Is that guy going to put his hands up, too? Because I don't want to be the only person with my hands up, you know? So then there's a lot more, there's like, questions and stuff. But just, like, a mob mentality is easy to
control
and direct.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, totally. So, as you're doing it, did you do it kind of like a... is it almost like an MTV Unplugged thing or a VH1 Storytellers thing where you're playing the song and then telling people like the behind the scenes of like how it happened and everything?
Yeah. So there's that, and the performances are honest. It's not even about the performance.
Right.
You know what I mean? The performance is
it's
almost
about kicking it, dude.
Yeah, it's about kicking it. They're like, "Oh, I want to ask this guy questions."
Yeah.
And I just want to see if he thinks I'm funny.
Right.
You know, and like I had a friend of mine who I become friends with a lot of like the certain fans. I'm just like, you're fucking cool as shit.
Hey,
man.
I just had a fucking on my way over here. I know I shouldn't text and drive, but I just had a half hour Snapchat conversation with my homie Ryan Taylor, who I know listens to the podcast. So shout out Ryan Taylor.
Nice.
Who's like just a fan that I've been meeting at shows actually since like the Knocksteady days. Like he used to come to those.
But that's what I'm saying. So there's a bunch of really cool people. I mean, I think the people that identify with your expression are you're naturally going to have things in common with if they can get past the fact that you're
a normal person
and you're standing right in front of them, you know?
Once you see them at enough shows, too, there's like this wall gets broken where it's like, oh, they're no longer...
Yeah.
You feel guilty as a human calling them a fan.
Right.
And you're just like...
Exactly.
You're a fucking dude that like...
Exactly.
Pays attention, and I know who you are just like you know who
exactly.
I am.
Exactly. I find that my struggle has been keeping fans and not letting them get too close,
right,
to where it kind of ruins the whole listener thing.
Totally.
You know what I mean? Because I think I'm a pretty, once I let people in, I'm a pretty like personable dude. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? So like, they'll be like, first, oh my God, I can't believe it's Johnny Polygon. I can't believe you're right in front of me. Oh my God, I can't believe you're at my house. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, I can't believe you're still at my house. Oh my God, I can't believe I'm smoking with you. Yeah. Oh my God, I can't believe you ate my leftovers, you fucking dick. Oh my God, you're still at my house. Like,
oh my God.
Next day, I can't believe you're still here, dude. What the fuck?
Why are you making out with my mom?
What? I trusted you.
Are you my dad now?
He'd be like, I love Johnny, but I got some personal things against him. Some extremely personal things.
I have a thing kind of like that where I'll meet people because they listen to my music. Well, particularly women. I'll meet women. Like sometimes when I meet women that listen to my music, I'll meet them through that. But then I assume like once they get to know me, they immediately stop giving a flying fuck about my music.
And I think that happens.
But I forget. And then they'll be like, oh. Like they'll hear it, this is like hasn't happened recently, but if I put out something new, they're like, "Oh, why'd you say this? Was that about da 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 da?" And I'm just like, "Oh shit, I didn't even think that you would listen to anything new that I put out because I assume that once you find out about me as a human, I'm of no interest as an artist anymore." You know?
Yeah, I think there's definitely something to be said as far as mystique,
right,
and stuff like that. But I just think we're not in that age anymore, or at least that isn't the. I have a mystique for some people, and then for other people, I think it's, yeah, but it's just Johnny. Like, yeah, we love his music, but it's just Johnny, man.
It's funny the different routes that you can go in this day and age as far as mystique goes, because there are some people that choose to put every single aspect everywhere, whether it be Snapchat, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, whatever, and or all of those at the same time,
right?
24 hours a day.
Yeah.
And then there are other people who like put out a project once every 2 years and are literally not on Twitter, not on Instagram or whatever. And they have these huge cult followings and everyone wants to know who they are. And they don't do interviews or anything.
They're the lucky few, I think.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's a pretty rare, thing nowadays. For me, I'm more about, my offline following.
Well, I almost think the sleepover shows sounds like getting to partake in a real life Snapchat with you or something.
Right.
You know what I mean?
The sleepover shows, it's like a metaphor for my entire career. You know what I mean? Like, I can't go to Dallas and play a stadium or like sell out a show and go pick up like a couple grand.
But you have 10 people that will give their left testicle to just come see you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I will go to Dallas for them.
Right.
And then I will bounce. And none of that has shit to do with the internet. Yeah. None of that has anything to do with like my follower count or anything like that. So it's like, I'm literally thinking, okay, last time we did 8 people and, you know, the tickets were, you know, $400 or whatever.
Yeah.
Now there's 20 people that are willing to pay like $500-$600.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm like, oh shit, that's insane growth.
Right.
But I'm trying to keep it. It's like, it's this weird purgatory because I can't do any bigger sleepover shows. Like, I can't do any more than 8 people because I can't find a house that big. You know what I mean?
Totally.
It's like, it doesn't, it kind of loses its.
Je ne sais quoi.
Yeah. The next thing I want to do, like, I want to do one here in L.A. And then, like, a show, too.
Yeah.
Like, a regular show.
Yeah.
You know? And then
everybody goes to the house afterwards. Or
just the people
that pay the big bucks.
Yeah.
That's tight.
Yeah. I think that's like, that's the next step of that.
That'd be smart.
Yeah.
You're very innovative, man. Innovative thinking right there.
Hey, I'm just thinking of what works for me, you know? Like, some artists from, say, like, my hometown or something, they'll just be like, yeah, we want to be like you, man. And you know, the sleepover ideas it's a great show, and we want to do that.
That's a really smart idea. I'm actually surprised that, like, I'm surprised that people didn't like that BuzzFeed didn't pick up on that or something. Like that seems like a viral type of idea.
I don't get that sort of like.
Oh, me neither.
I don't get any sort of press or blogs or. I used to when I was focused on that and like paying to be there, basically, like, you know, with the publicist and the labels and, you know, all that sort of stuff. But I couldn't have done a sleepover show back then. No one would have cared.
Right. Exactly. I haven't really worked out the whole algorithm of it in my head or whatever, but I have this kind of theorem about the blog and the press love type of shit.
Mm-hmm.
It's like when you're they want new and they want to break artists. So your first cycle that you come out with that's like something good,
right?
The blogs all want to pick up on it, and you're part of their press cycle because you're doing the whole like, okay, I'm going to release a single per week for 5 weeks up until the album comes out, and have a music video at the end of that, and that'll be the big kaboom when the album comes out, and you know all the blogs pick up on it, and you're like, fuck, I'm on. You know, but then it's that law of diminishing returns where like the next album it's a little harder that you have to like send a couple follow-up emails,
right?
And then by the third one they don't give a shit about you anymore because like you didn't pop,
right?
And so there's these very few artists, like you look at a Chance the Rapper or a Frank Ocean or whoever, like the blogs picked up on them and then boom, they fucking popped.
And that's what the blogs want.
And now, yeah, exactly. So now they don't ever have to send an email about their songs. Like, people are trying to fucking post about every time they fart or something.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Exactly.
Whereas if you're an artist that came out around the same time as them and didn't pop, that's it. If you didn't get your fan base to care about you that first cycle, like, it's going to be an uphill battle the rest of the time.
Yeah. I also think that there comes when you're first starting, right? Or you're first starting to put out music and you're first starting to get blog love, it's about you and like hey, look at this person we found and stuff like that. And then as you keep going, I think it becomes more about those blogs.
Right.
You know, and I think the age of the blog is dying.
It's dying.
I think music journalism is pathetic now. I actually saw you talking that was you who said that.
Yeah.
That it's just literally like music journalism now is like, what did Kanye tweet?
Oh, it's terrible.
You know what I mean? Yeah. I was like, yo, I'll just go to his timeline.
Right.
And see that. Like, show me something interesting about music that I don't already know.
Right.
But I think there was a good couple years there where it was all about the blog.
That was it.
Like, oh, I need to get on Pitchfork, or I need to
get
on
Two Dope Boys.
Oh, I need to be on the Fader or something. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Right.
And it's like, how is that really how people discover new music?
Right. And that's not how I discovered it. By the time it hits Fader, that's where I'm like, oh, okay, now it's mainstream.
Yeah.
Or it's like blown up.
Right.
Because they're not nude. They're like they're on the wave of like, we want the people we're posting about to bring us clicks.
Exactly.
And so if you're a new artist, unless you're a sure thing,
right,
you're not bringing them clicks.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. But I find a lot of solace and similarity in our situation that way.
Definitely.
We had our, like, first moment and then – but I think that you and I both kind of were able to because I talk about it the same way when you said I don't have like big Twitter numbers and followers. But it's like the people that follow fucking care.
Yeah.
And I think that's like really important. And when, you know, when younger artists used to ask me like, oh, you know, what should I do about this? And I tell them like, look, I don't have the answer. All I know is like you need to not worry about all the other bullshit and just like worry about getting your following for yourself.
Yeah.
Because paying for a post on fucking Noisy or Pitchfork or Vice or Fader, it does not do shit for you.
It doesn't do shit.
It doesn't do anything for you.
It might help you book one show that you can't bring enough people to and they're bummed they book you.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
I think it helps you jump the gun.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you're ready to be on those sort of things, it'll happen and they'll be they'll be begging to post your shit, and right. they'll be writing articles about your tweets and shit right. like that.
When I get people trying to submit songs for this shit all the time, you know, and
yeah,
and their reps will send me like, oh, you know, and so posted about it, and this posted about them, and I'm just kind of like,
what?
Yeah, but does anybody give a fuck about them?
Right.
Like when they tweet a random thought, do like 40 people retweet it? Because if not, no one cares. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
And
how relevant do you think like Twitter and social media is to an artist's well-being?
I think – oh, I have a bunch of theories about this. You want to talk about this shit?
Mm-hmm.
Because this will turn into an intuition podcast, and then people will go, like, you didn't even let Johnny talk. But okay, so I have like some pretty good like theories about this. Like, I think okay. Twitter is what I would consider the most socially relevant, as in there's a small – subsect of society on there, but it's generally like influencers and yeah. people who are really seeking to cutting edge information, right?
Okay.
You get news faster on Twitter than you get it on TV.
Yes.
You get news about music, sports, whatever,
right.
fast as fuck on there, right?
Right.
And so if you garner a big Twitter following,
okay.
the cool kids like you, right? Mm-hmm. But I don't think that a Twitter following equates to revenue, right?
Right.
I don't think you can look at somebody and go, God damn, they have 300,000 followers. They must be caking.
Right.
It's like, man.
You can say that about Instagram, though.
Oh, you can say that about Instagram, too.
Yeah.
And so I think Instagram is already like falling off. Like, I
definitely.
Think Instagram is the next social media that no one's going to give a fuck about.
Right. Everyone's Snapchatting right now.
Everyone hates Facebook and thinks it's for old people. And to an extent, they are correct. But I'll tell you what.
It's still there.
I think people that have big Facebook followings are making more money in general than people with big Twitter followings. And sometimes,
like, through like ad sales or
no, not through ad sales. I just think like Facebook is, since it's a little more basic, like if it, like moms are on there, aunts are on there, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like your grandma's on Facebook, like
right.
people who are on Facebook are normal,
right?
It's normcore, and normal people want to spend money on shit they like,
right?
Right. Twitter people are the motherfuckers that are hitting you for guest list, and they want everything for free,
right?
Because they're cool.
But Facebook know? Costs money to. Like, especially if you have a big Facebook following,
yeah.
then you have to pay to reach those people.
To an extent. But if you find out – if you kind of like play with it – sometimes I'll have to post something 3 or 4 times before it starts to go.
Right.
But it's like if you're posting any links from outside of Facebook, yeah, they kind of cock block you. Or
they cock block hard.
Yeah, but
if there's a link in there, it's like 79 people have reached right. of your 10,000.
But that's the thing, is that now Facebook, you can upload most forms of media onto it. Not music, but you could do a music video
or yeah.
And not like you can't – if you post an Instagram link, like, yeah, it's going to go nowhere. But if you post that photo to Facebook, it'll get a ton of traction because
yeah.
that's what they want, is to swallow up all your content. Right.
right.
So if you post
– for them to be like the source of it,
yeah,
for it to be hosted.
So now
there.
It's irrelevant to post your YouTube video on there, but if you upload that YouTube video directly to Facebook, then it'll go.
You know, I've never done that.
You should. If particularly
never
if YouTube's not a huge revenue maker for you, then like put it on Facebook and watch it go, and
wow.
just tell people to share it,
right?
And it'll go, dude. And so,
ooh.
Anyway, so I think
what is like? Do they like? Is there big copyright stuff with Facebook and stuff?
No, like, not really. They're like so hungry for video content because they're trying to compete with YouTube right now, and they're like doing revenue sharing on Facebook now. If you get enough.
Okay.
But yeah, so I really think, because I see a lot of times where people will have a huge Twitter following, you know, like 50 to 100,000 people, and then and then they don't even have a Facebook fan page,
right?
And I'm like, oh, these are like new people that are just starting to pop off, because like you said, when you're like we were talking about, when you're in that first record cycle and
yeah.
the blogs are hungry for you,
yeah, everything's so exciting.
So is Twitter's yeah. hungry for you, and so everybody that follows Fader is going to follow
right.
that new artist, right?
Right.
But those normal people that hear about everything 2 or 3 years late,
yeah,
they're on Facebook waiting to spend that money, but they got to hear about you, and they're not going to do it for 2 or 3 more years. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I don't know.
I was, you know, I'm big on what is life, what is your life like offline?
Right.
Like, what can you do offline?
Totally.
Because, like I said, all last year I was on the road. I went out with, you know, several different people, as well as just like headline some stuff myself. And I would go out with someone who had, you know, 80,000 Twitter followers.
Mm-hmm.
And no fans at the show. Mm-hmm. Like, no fans. And I'm not saying that the people... I'm not saying they have fake followers or they're bots or whatever. Because I would, like, look at their tweets... And they would get interactions and retweets and, you know, and then people would be like, oh, such and such is the truth and blah, blah, blah. And then we go out on the road. No one comes out. Nobody comes out. It's like, I'm not sure. I think everyone just so desperately wants to be a comedian now.
Yeah.
You know, like everybody. And I mean, including myself, I think I'm funny and I like being funny on social media. But... You know, did you see the thing about, like, 50 Cent, like, making fun of the dude at the airport or whatever?
Yeah.
So, like, he wasn't trying to make fun of, like, a handicapped dude or whatever. He was literally just trying to be funny for the likes.
Right.
You know what I mean? He was doing it for the snap. He was doing it for the gram.
Right, totally.
And it's just funny that, like, 50 Cent, man, when, 50 Cent, okay, shot 9 times. Like, the last huge gangster rapper to really, you know, sell millions and millions of records is now, like, selfie video, listen to my funny opinion.
Yeah, doing it for the notification cycle.
Yo, putting wigs on and, like, all this sort of shit. It's just like, wow.
Right. Yeah, it's crazy. And I think there are, like, so many mini metrics within everything that we're talking about, too, as far as, like, those people that have big followings and then nobody comes to their shows. It's like, if you really dig into it, I'll look at somebody's Twitter that, like...
You'll find them. You'll figure it out.
Right. That, like, people would assume at a glance that, oh, damn, this is popping. And then it's like, oh, they have 80,000 followers. But then you realize, oh, they're following 5,000 people.
Yeah.
And they... you know, when they're retweeting a lot of shit. And so that when you retweet a ton of shit, like, people stop caring about your timeline. And then it's like when they actually do post something, it's only getting like 5 or 10 retweets and not like, if you have 80,000 followers, you should be getting 300-400 retweets on every single tweet.
Right.
You know what I mean? Or else no one cares about you. That's kind of the mini metric in my head is like, if you, anytime that you post anything on Instagram, Facebook, fucking Twitter, whatever, 10% of your following should be interacting with it. And if not, then you're not doing it right.
Right.
Right?
Anyway. That seems like good math.
That's like a good – if you look at any
– If not, then delete it.
Right. Then delete it.
Like, that's not a good post.
Right. Like, exactly. I'm
drop
like,
it.
Oh, this is shitty. Yeah. That's how I'm the king of tweeted and deleted.
Oh, man. Me too.
Yeah.
Well, me too. Sometimes I'm just like, oh, this is amazing. Wait till the world gets a load of this one.
Right.
Nothing?
Right.
Exactly. Well, it was stupid anyway. Let's get rid of it.
I mean, oh, dude, I'm sure that people listening to this that follow my music are going like, you spend too much time thinking about social media, not enough about raps. To that, I say, fuck you. Don't worry about what I do.
I mean, social media is the new life, you know? I definitely think I've been doing this whole offline approach.
Yeah.
And it's like I'm in my own little, like, quiet wonderland.
Yeah.
That... Like, you know, you were saying, like, I can't believe BuzzFeed didn't, cover the sleepover shows. Well, they weren't one of the 8 people there.
Totally.
You know what I mean? And unless it's something that they know they can get at least a slideshow of 10 clicks from.
Right.
Then they're probably not really gonna fuck with it. You know?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. But one day, I'm sure they will, maybe.
The whole thing about any, like, viral content in general is, like, if you're trying to make it,
it's not going to work.
It's already not viral.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
It kind of has to happen serendipitously.
Yeah.
A lot of the time.
Like, I'm thinking of that. Who's that girl that's, you know, she's sitting there, like, with her legs crossed. She's a black girl. And it's like.
Oh, yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about. And it's like the you know. I know what you're talking about. Like when you're
everybody,
like,
knows.
Yeah, when you get caught cheating or whatever, and this is how she walk, or when you walk in the house, she's looking at you like
exactly. Right. So, like, no way that was, like, purposely
right when
viral.
She posted that, she wasn't like, oh my god, I'm gonna become a meme. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Like, I've just been realizing that memes are people too.
Oh yeah,
I've just been realizing that. Like the guy on the phone who's like, just like sitting there, like waiting in line and kind of looking kind of mad. Like, that's a real dude. You know what I mean? And like, Like, I've watched a show, The Internet Ruined My Life or whatever.
Yeah.
And I have this whole thing about memes now. Like, I used to just, like, post memes all the time. And now I'm, like, really torn with it. I'm just like, oh, my God, this guy looks ridiculous. But he's a real person.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to poke fun at this dude. Because, like, what if I got memed? You know what I mean? Dude, you can be fucking Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
And, like, most kids in this generation know his face for being the crying face.
Right.
Like, forget about everything he ever did in the NBA. Yeah. Forget about, like, forget about him basically putting Nike on as a company. Right. Like, he's, like, the person responsible for them being successful. He's just a crying.
He's the Wash Jordan face. That's
man.
It.
Yeah. Man. I wonder if that bothers him. Or it's like, I mean, can he monetize that? Does it make him relevant? That seems like something like a Kardashian would go for.
Right.
But when you're Michael Jackson or Michael Jordan,
yeah.
It's like, oh, I think Michael Jackson might have been like the original meme.
It's like, I mean, imagine if Michael Jordan could monetize that, how many pairs of mom jeans he could buy. That motherfucker got the boot cut jean game on lock.
I got these on discount.
Damn. He wants the cuffs of his jeans to never touch his Jordans. He's like, these Jordans are going to remain flawless. If he could wear JNCOs, he would.
I feel like he buys those jeans like 500 pairs at a time.
That shit is so crazy. Oh, yeah. Easy, dog. Yeah. Like, he's still wearing the same pair that he bought in bulk from fucking 1998.
Right.
He's like, I got this shipment in 1998. I'm still wearing these shits. I don't care if they're out of style.
No, they still work. They still work. I'm Michael Jordan.
Yeah, Michael Jordan mom jeans on lock.
Or, like, you know, seeing, say, like, Birdman or something.
Right. Put some respect on it. Became such a huge meme. And, like,
he had no clue.
Overnight, it became so huge.
He had no clue, but he's like an old school dude.
Right.
Like, I just feel like he's someone who came from the era of music where you could bully people behind the scenes.
I mean, dude, he fucking paid he paid everybody in chains. He didn't give anybody any royalties or any money. Here's your chain. Welcome to Cash Money. Here's your chain. You're rich now.
Right.
And never gave him any money.
Right. And if those guys could tweet their chain back in the day,
right,
someone would tweet them, that's all you got?
Right, exactly. And they'd be like, oh, wait.
I should have more than this fucking chain.
Right. I have a hit record. Why do I only have a chain?
Right. Did you hear the Birdman Respect On It song?
No.
Yeah. He put out a song.
Sometimes I see these links and I feel like I already know what they are, and so I just don't click. I'm like, I get it. They auto-tuned it and made a song out of it.
Yeah. You don't really need to hear it.
Was it the Hamiltones singing it? Is that what it was?
No. It's like he put out a song called Respect.
Oh, I didn't hear that.
It's like his song, and he's rapping on it.
Okay.
And actually, the beat's pretty cool, but you can just tell that he still just, like, doesn't get it. You know what I mean? Like, don't make a song about – you're the punchline of the joke.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And I know that you were really mad about being memed. And then someone was like, you should do what it is. You should capitalize on this and make a song. Check out this beat.
Right.
And he's like, okay, well, this is a new day and age, so that's what I'm going to try and do. But it's like, that's not going to stop the meme, dog. You can't
outrun that meme.
Yeah.
You know.
You know, I feel like the most important probably person in the hip-hop culture right now is probably Charlamagne.
Really?
Definitely.
Why?
I just think he's the voice of
dissent.
Not even dis. I don't really think he's that. Like, I don't think he's a hater.
Yeah.
I just think he is the voice of the social media. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's like there's a reason why certain people won't do an interview with him, because he's not there to. I don't know. He's
definitely not there to pat your back.
No, he's not excited to see anybody.
Right, right.
You know what I mean?
He's not shook by anyone. Like,
right.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I don't, like, you know, it's crazy you got me on here talking about artists, because I try to never talk about artists on public record.
Yeah.
But, like, I just saw this Drake interview.
Yeah.
It was like an hour long.
Oh, the Zane Lowe one?
The Zane Lowe one.
Yeah.
Right?
I didn't watch it, but I read some links, so that had
some
highlights.
It's a puff piece.
Yeah, totally.
It's a complete like, it's just a fluff, right. You know what I mean? Right. And
well,
I think
that was part of his planned media release. It's like, okay, here's the media cycle. We're going to do this, right. this, and then it's the big shebang. We'll be put it out on Beats One,
right.
And you know, Zayn will do the interview.
Yeah, see, fuck that, because if he would have done like a Charlamagne interview, Charlamagne would be like, "So what's up with your ghostwriters? You got ghostwriters,
right?
You know what I mean?
Where's Quentin at on this album?
Exactly. Like what's the real deal?
Right.
And which is another subject that I'm.
Have you heard the new record?
No, dude, I don't hear shit.
Oh.
I'm just like, I just make shit. I'm busy making it.
Yeah.
So it's like I don't mean that in like a pretentious way, because I'm a Drake fan. I love Drake. Yeah. I think he's amazing.
Yeah.
But I barely heard Kanye's new record. I haven't heard Beyonce shit, and I haven't heard Drake shit yet. But I'm sure when I do, I'm going to love it, because I've loved everything else all those artists have put out, you know.
I wish that I have like, you know what? I don't have IRL FOMO anymore. I have URL FOMO. I more fear missing out on understanding what's going on my Twitter timeline than I do of missing out on a party.
Yeah.
And that's so stupid.
That's funny.
That's so fucking dumb of me, and admitting that out loud feels ridiculous. But a little bit of a weight off my shoulders, perhaps. But I wish I could get an... When I'm at my most creative, I'm the same way. I'm not like paying attention to shit.
Yeah.
And I'm not listening to records. I'm only listening to beats.
Right.
And writing and stuff. But right now I'm like fully everything that comes out. I'm just like,
you're just soaking it in.
I'm soaking it in, and then I'm fucking tweeting about it and memeing about it and whatever. Fucking, yeah. You know, it's so dumb. It's so counterproductive, but
I don't know if it's dumb. It's just one of those things to where it's, you know, people aren't looking for information. They want affirmation.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? So it's like an easy way to do that is throw it on your social media and tweet it to the choir. You know what I mean? Like, let people who you know are going to agree with your specific point of view tell you that you're right.
I know.
Like, absolutely.
But I hate the fact that I'm a part of that.
Everyone is.
I know.
I am too.
It disgusts me.
Everyone is a part of that. You know who's probably the only person I know who's not a part of that is probably like The Weeknd.
Right.
I don't know if he tweets at all.
The Weeknd seems like the only artist to have escaped the wrath of Drake and come out on top.
Yeah, he bounced pretty quick.
But you remember Take Care was pretty much a Weeknd record.
That's what I heard.
I mean, Take Care has, I mean, there's his, all those melodies you can hear Abel in them, whether or not he's singing them. And then he's got two featured tracks on there.
Right.
And I mean,
how do you feel about ghostwriting and stuff? What's the big,
I don't care about
ghostwriting. I don't understand what the thing is.
I don't
is.
Care about it. Here's the man. People always make such a stink about it. And like, yeah, I'm an artist that's written all of my own songs. That doesn't mean that I'm any better than anybody else. That just means I'm never going to have a hit record. You know what I mean? Because I'm not doing it by committee, because to make hit records, you have to have a committee of people going like, you know what? This is tight. Oh, but this will be tighter. Yeah, you know what?
Yeah.
Actually, that offends me. So let's take that out and do this. And it's like, okay, that's all it is, making a record by committee. But what's the difference between, you know, Drake or Beyonce or Kanye having people helping them in the writing process than
a producer,
Otis Redding or Sam Cooke or whomever back in those days singing other written songs? You know what I mean?
I'll tell you is, one, when you're talking about singing,
mm-hmm.
people are used to there being co-writers and producers and reference tracks and it going through like several different artists, and like Jackson 5, you know, they wrote like what, one song the entire time they were together.
Right.
So like people are used to that. But when you're talking about rap, rap is all about, oh, he's so cold. You hear what he said? How he come up with that and blah, 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 and like all this shit.
I get that.
And I just think it's,
sometimes a rapper becomes so much bigger than a rapper, though. Like, Drake is a pop star.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Drake is no different than what Madonna was.
Right.
You know what I mean? Drake, to me, is like, I mean, I'm not trying to throw shade or belittle his abilities as a rapper, but I mean, like, he's as iconic to the society as fucking Lady Gaga is or something. You know what I mean?
It's so funny. You still have like, you still have artist guilt about criticizing other artists.
Right.
You know?
No, totally. I'll never consider myself a journalist.
Yeah, of course.
That's not what I am. I'm an artist first and foremost, but I'm a fan too.
There's like a thing that's like, it's like a La Cosa Nostra. It's like this thing of ours. We're not supposed to.
Well, because you look like a hater. You look like an asshole. And I'm not. Yeah. Here's the thing is that I'm not being a hater. I'm not jealous. I'm not like distraught with where my life is whatsoever. And that's the thing that people always throw at you when you are. Right. So you're only saying that because you're mad. No, I'm not mad. I'm a fan.
Right.
And what I'm saying is I don't give a shit about ghostwriters. I just don't care because. You know, when you hear the Quentin Miller demos and then you hear what the song turned into when Drake did it,
it's
you
way better.
You can see why he was like, yo, this is a hit. You should have it.
Yes, it's
yours.
Because
he took that piece of art and turned it into something much bigger than it would have been by itself.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
And there's a reason, like when you have a team of people, there's a reason there's a team captain. Mm-hmm. Because that dude that steers the ship is the one that the most people are going to gravitate to.
Yeah, they're going to listen to.
They're going
to
listen to.
Follow.
It. Because what's the point of writing a great song if no one ever hears it? It's like I'd rather – if I wrote a great song and somebody else wanted it, like fucking – yeah, if you're – take it.
Right.
Make it a big – make it a hit because it ain't going to be a hit if I do it.
Man, I've been in that position a lot. I can never – I can't. I try. I'm in the songwriting position all the time. Mm-hmm. Like a bigger artist will hear something that I've done and they'll be like – I want my album to sound like they're like not even I want my album to sound like that. They're like I want that song for my album.
Right.
Like everything that you say in it, I want to take it and then I want to say it instead.
Right.
And that's I'll put that on my record. And it's like almost not even out of any sort of artistic integrity or anything. I just can never like let the shit.
Well, it's like a sense of ownership. Like that feels like a if it's your baby.
Yeah, I'm just like, oh, you like it? Yeah, that's because it's probably pretty tight.
Right, right.
You know what I mean? So maybe this one is good. Right. I think I'll keep it for myself.
Right, right.
You know, thanks. I haven't stepped away from the artist thing like ever.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, and so that's the thing is that I haven't had that problem because my. The verses that I write in particular, like I could write a hook for whoever, like rap hook, like whatever. That shit is, you know, melody, blah, blah, blah. I'll punch something out in 5 minutes and you can have it, whatever. But my verses in particular are so hyper specific to me as a person that anyone else rapping them, they'd be like, oh, that guy, he wrote that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like it just wouldn't fit anybody else.
And like, you're rapping about how you have like a 3-letter name.
Right.
And-
yeah. I'm like, you know what I'm saying? Like I woke up this morning and had an onion bagel. Like, you know, so it's like, I've never had that problem where somebody's like, oh, yo, write me raps. I mean, I've written raps for people and I've written songs for people, but it's like, a lot of times I feel like it gets a little watered down or something because
yeah. Let's talk about white rap real quick.
Okay. Yeah. Let's talk about white rap. We were having this conversation outside. I've become very uncomfortable in my skin as a white rapper.
It's a funny segue because there's an artist that is in the white rap world.
Yeah.
That was like wanting to use a bunch of my records for his record. And it's like there's like the white rap genre is just so. Like I know kids who only listen to white rap,
and I had this conversation on the podcast a little bit with Bus Driver, where it's like I get a lot of kids and who talk about you're real hip hop, dog. Yeah. Yo, dog, you're real hip hop. Like, nah, all that other shit.
Yeah.
You're the real hip hop, and I'm like, no.
Yeah.
No, that's not how it works. Like, and it's really like just kids that, they only listen to white rappers.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. Like I know kids who only. If you were to say KRS-One or Mobb Deep or just like any sort of like
I think those kids that only listen to white rap now they go back and listen to those artists from 20 years ago, 30 years ago, and that makes them feel they go, oh, this is real hip hop, and it's like, no, that's just you defining what you think is real hip hop. But
right.
if you give them like a great rapper from today that's pushing the art form, they'll be like, this is garbage.
Yeah.
You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I can't, I mean, yeah, like people that say that Drake is garbage, it's like,
I don't understand that at all.
It's crazy.
People are going to say anything successful is
right,
garbage.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I always feel like I get kids that only listen to white rap that they want to use Lil Wayne as a scapegoat.
Oh, yeah.
They go like, oh, yeah, you're not all, like all I like. They go, how is this shit? No one hears it. And all the bullshit like Lil Wayne is on the radio. That's like the direct quote.
I get that all the time, right. too.
And what the funny thing about that to me is that
has nothing to do with you.
It doesn't have anything to do with me, but beyond that, it's such a played out thing. Like Lil Wayne realistically hasn't been popping for almost 7 years.
Yeah.
So that means that like not only are you obviously new to rap, but you're so like
out of touch.
You're so out of touch with it that you don't even have any yeah. idea like that, like, you know,
and this whole time MC Hammer is the number one guy.
Right, like, you know, like Thugger and Ray Sremmurd and all these guys have like overtaken the radio
yeah.
from Wayne like years ago. You yeah. know what I mean?
Which and, I don't get the new. I can't do like the auto tune.
Oh, see, I love Future. I'm like a I'm Future Hive. Like, I'm a straight Future stan. Like,
really?
Oh, I love him.
Explain it to me. It's like
I'll send you a mixtape that I put to, that I just put out.
Okay.
Not put out, but I, like I tweeted it because it's yeah. just like a my favorite.
I literally like the sound of auto tune.
Yeah.
Just kind of makes my flesh crawl.
I see it as a tool. Like to me, that dude is. He's a crooner more than a rapper, right? Like, here's the thing, and maybe I'll get hate for this, but Frank Sinatra wasn't a great singer.
No, he
He's
wasn't.
He's just a crooner. He's, you know, New York. Like, anyone can sing like that if you try.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think
it's more about – Future's a fucking rock star for sure.
Future has crazy melodies too. He has crazy melodies. He's like an amazing songwriter. And uses the auto-tune as a tool because I think he knows like he can't technically sing. He does have a great voice and he uses it for effect and it just helps his process. And to me, I don't know.
I try to get it. It's like,
yeah, it's not my place to really like, make it academic or something. Like,
yeah,
or like
yeah,
you
yeah.
know what I mean? It's not my place to analyze it.
Validate it for me, Lee.
Yeah, exactly. I know it's like not my fucking culture to analyze and I sound like a dumbass white person like trying to like rationalize it. It just speaks to me. That's the only thing that it just speaks to me.
I just want you to know, yeah. just because you rap and you're white,
yeah,
like that doesn't mean that you have something to apologize for.
I appreciate you saying that. I also
because I don't put you in that
the white rapper category.
The white rapper world. Do you know what I mean?
I try
like
to
when
never
I'm thinking
pander,
of white rapper.
I try to never pander to white fans.
Yeah,
and I feel like so many white rappers try to pander to white fans.
Right.
You know what I mean? Not the OG generation of white rappers. You know your fucking
Atmospheres.
I don't think your Atmospheres, your LPs, your Aesop Rocks. I don't think those dudes do that. I think the kids that were inspired by them tend to do that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They write.
They're like, hell yeah, we have a voice. And
they write this like high school martyr poetry and over a beat. And
yeah.
And that's what it is, you know?
Right.
And I'm not saying I didn't go through that phase. I certainly did. But I think eventually
I was one of the labels I was on. I've had two deals.
Yeah.
In my career. And the second deal was based out of Malibu, California.
Right.
It's like 2000.
I remember you telling me about that.
Like 2012-ish or whatever.
Yeah.
So I was around a lot of the white rappers that are like starting to like really pop off now. And you know, it was I don't know, as a black artist or as a black rapper, it's kind of I don't know how to explain it. It's like I could say something that won't make – I could say the same exact thing as say like a white rapper in like the white rap genre mm-hmm. or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And it won't make like the impact that if someone that looks like all these other millions of people said the same exact thing, then all of a sudden it's like, oh my God, it's so ill. Like, holy shit, how did he come up with that shit? You know what I mean? It's like, even like, you know, take like the OG official white rapper, say like Eminem.
Right.
Right? So like his lyrics weren't really any more like shocking than like Biggie lyrics. Mm-mm. You know what I mean? But because he was like white and Eminem.
And he wasn't really rapping any different than like the Outsiders or something.
Yeah. Exactly. It's like it's literally.
It's so funny that you say that. I was just thinking about that today in the shower. I do a lot of my thinking in the shower.
Yeah.
My water bill is outrageous. dad joke. But I was just thinking about that because I was thinking – I don't know. I ponder the white rapper thing a lot, I guess. But yeah. I was just kind of like,
you feel guilty. You have a lot of guilt.
I do
have
so much white guilt now.
Yeah.
But I was just I was like contextually wondering if like were we all tricked by him? Like, was he really that much better than everyone out at that time? Because I remember when he dropped, it was like, oh my God, this is a rap revolution.
Yeah.
And now I look back and I go, was it? Because like it turned out he didn't really pay off. Like, after his first couple albums, he's never done anything for me since then. You know what I mean?
I think that the reason why Eminem was so successful is like, one, I think he was really talented, and I think he was a white rapper before there was the genre,
right,
before there was a bunch of other people.
Right.
He was co-signed by like
Dre.
Fucking Dre.
Everybody.
Like, N.W.A.
Yeah.
Dre's like, yo, this guy is the next dude. And he was the first dude that I was hearing that was doing, like, multi-syllabic rhymes.
On a mainstream level.
On a mainstream level.
And so here's the thing is that...
But who was doing that before him? Who was doing, like...
Well, I mean...
I got brain damage. There's mayonnaise on this. I need a plain sandwich.
Right.
Is that a real lyric? I don't know.
I don't know. But yeah, you're right. He was definitely doing, like, some syllabic stuff that a lot of people weren't... Most people were doing, like, maybe two-syllable rhymes tops. Yeah. What I will say, contextually, that's, like, my favorite word... If we think back about that time, the stuff that we didn't hear about is that there were – the same way that you have your Macklemores and your GEZs blown up, and you and I have both known about those guys for probably 10 years.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, we've been hearing those names in underground circles forever.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's pictures – like I said, I've said it 100 times. There's pictures of Nocan battling fucking Macklemore 10 years ago in Seattle. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, this is a guy who's been around. And
I spent 4th of July with Riff Raff in like 2011.
You know what I'm saying? Like, Riff Raff was just a dude you used to see around LA.
I was like, what?
Yeah.
This guy.
Yeah, exactly. And so at that time, the stuff that we don't hear about because we were like in high school is that the Midwest did have a white rap scene going on because Scribble Jam was going on. Eminem was battling, you know. And Slug was battling, and Dose One was battling,
but
and
social
Dose
media
now
wasn't
around.
Motherfucker.
And
yo,
so what I'm
themselves.
Saying is that there are a bunch of white rappers that tell the same way that I tell stories about, like, oh, I knew who Macklemore was because we were in the same kind of scene.
Yeah.
Before he blew up.
Right.
It is like those are the same those dudes that were around Eminem have those same stories. Like, oh yeah, I was a fucking rapper in the Midwest right before he blew up. He's just the one that got chose.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of, it's almost like this Matrix thing of like every time Zion falls, it just falls, you know, long enough to where everybody else forgets about it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But see,
and history keeps repeating itself.
Here's the thing though. I feel like if Twitter was around when Eminem first came out, he would have most likely Iggy'd himself.
Oh, for sure.
Like, with just... Because, I mean, back then, you would hear criticisms, and the way you would answer your critics is with your material.
Well, I think...
You know what I mean?
And if Twitter was around back then with the outfits that he was using... I mean, like, let's think about it, dude. He was constantly in, like, velour suits. He was wearing do-rags.
Right.
Like, dude, Twitter would have gone apeshit on him for cultural appropriation.
Right.
Because...
he would have fell into that trap, and he would have responded.
He would have snapped back.
And then it would have been like, yo, fuck this guy.
Right.
Exactly. You know, like, what the hell?
And so that's the thing is, like, when you get a kid like Post Malone who's getting called out for cultural appropriation all the time, like, what he's doing contextually is not that different visually from what Eminem was doing back then. It's just like Eminem was doing was wearing stuff that that traditionally was looked at as like black outfits, you know what I mean, and like do-rags and head with a headband over it and baggy velour suits, et cetera, et cetera. That was what popular rappers were wearing at that time. Post Malone is doing the same thing. He's got braids that rappers have. He's got gold teeth because rappers have it. He's wearing the same outfits that rappers have, but he's getting called out all the time. And it's just because more people have their eyes on those things and more people are aware and sensitive to cultural appropriation. You know what I mean?
He should just ride it out, though. Like, because, I mean, even say, like, speaking of, like, Iggy Azalea, like, you know, she wasn't, like, the first white girl rapper. You know, I'm thinking about, say Fergie, right? When Fergie first was, like, dropping, like, London Bridges and My Humps and, like, all this sort of stuff, she was getting just as much heat as Iggy was, but she didn't have an outlet to, like, add fuel to the fire.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like
stepping
she
in
just
her
had
own
to,
piles of dog shit.
Right. Like, she just had to take it and then get up on stage and kill it and then drop another dope song.
Right.
And then eventually she, like, transitions into, like, now Fergie can... You know, she's fucking Fergie.
But even still, like, with Fergie, I felt like she was brought into the Black Eyed Peas to be their, like, pop angle. You know what I mean? Black Eyed Peas were an underground rap group for the longest.
For the longest.
And then they brought in Fergie and kind of changed their look a little bit and got real poppy. They did that song with Justin Timberlake.
Right.
And then it was on.
Right.
And so I never felt like, even though, yes, technically Fergie was making rap songs, it was like she was making pop songs that happened to have rap in them. And that's the same thing Iggy's doing. But
and you really got the feeling that Will was writing all that stuff anyway. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. Yeah, I think maybe – I don't know why there's like this fine line
difference. I'm obsessed
with
Iggy Azalea, by the way.
Are you? Just like the cultural phenomenon of it?
Just like the train wreck of it. Like I just every week or two.
How do you feel for Nick Young?
Man, I don't really watch sports or anything like that.
No,
so
neither do
like,
I. But I just like it must be so crazy to like be
I
dating
feel worse,
her and watching her do this stuff.
I feel worse for T.I., you know?
Right.
Because I feel like as the person who signed her, he's like naturally gonna like want to get her back and you know all this sort of stuff, and then it's like he lost a lot of his
credibility.
Like I, you know what I mean? It's like I literally saw, and now we're talking about when I say like old stuff, like I mean, like what maybe like 9 months ago, a year ago tops.
Right.
But I saw a thing where she was like about to rap or something, and he was like in the room, and he was like trying to like change the subject and like all this sort of stuff, and he was kind of like over here, you know, trying to like distract the whole thing, and that's what I think people have a problem with when they're talking about like culture vultures and stuff like that. Like, you're like if you can put on the, you think you can put on the accent. And you can put on the outfit.
That's another thing that I didn't even think of a second ago. Is that like one of the huge differences between Fergie and Iggy Azalea?
The black scent,
is the black scent.
Yeah.
And I feel like Fergie. Yeah, sure, she put a little twang on it, but at least she had an American accent.
Right.
You know
right.
what I mean? Like she wasn't flipping her voice into being like, "Oh, girl, let me tell you something," while she's rapping and just like total fucking mockery. You know what I mean? Whereas Iggy Azalea is fully doing that.
But Adele doesn't have an English accent when she sings, like.
Well, yeah, and the Beatles, you know. It's
like no one with an accent has an accent
when they're singing
R&B or they're rapping or something like that, because you sing in the accent you're used to listening to that type of music in. You know what I'm saying? Because even when I'm rapping, it's like I'll speak in a tone that I don't talk it. I don't actually speak that way.
And I notice myself kind of like letting my tongue a little looser as I'm rapping, more so just to make it sound smoother because it sounds better to turn a T into a D than it does to like you
also
know,
for rhyme's sake a lot.
Right, for rhymes like better. Diagonal rhymes or slanted rhymes or whatever they're called. anyway, that's tech talk.
Yeah.
Here's the thing, Johnny, is that I've been having a fucking identity crisis about music just because
I can tell.
Because I've been thinking about this, and that word contextual keeps popping into my head, because when I look at the context of everything, it's like all of the people, all of the idols that I was told were great musicians as I was growing up, the more I learn about them, the more I learn that they were just Macklemore's, they were Eminem's, right. They were fuck, you know what I mean?
Right.
The Rolling Stones were Macklemore. The Rolling Stones were Eminem. The Rolling Stones were me. They were somebody stealing a black art form.
Mm-hmm.
They were trying to sound like Muddy Waters at the time, or Howlin' Wolf, or whoever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Elvis, everybody. But it's
all
like, but it's like once that white band gets a hold of that sound, that's who gets the credit.
That's the only thing that bothers me about like the
well, and it bothers the
white rap genre.
It bothers the fuck out of me too, and that's why I'm having like so much trouble with it.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. But you'd be more like,
and it's not because I ever fucking blew up or made any money off of it. It's just because I'm like, fuck, I wasn't like self aware enough to like realize this shit earlier.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I don't know.
But you're also like in your 30s now.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, wait a minute.
Yeah, I'm growing up.
Everyone in their 30s, they look back and they're like, wait, I was an asshole. I've been an asshole.
Oh, I'm still an asshole.
I've been an asshole my entire life.
Yeah, totally, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, it just bugs me. And to know that, like, that's me. Like, I'm a white man.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
I mean, there's times I feel like, just me personally, I'll see, like, rap has gone like a lot more emotional lately. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it's not a rare thing to be a rapper who also like sings.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Like I've been doing that since I was 16.
Yeah, yeah.
Not like it was like a thing.
Right.
You know what I mean? I was just like, oh, well, this song calls for a melody, and this
totally.
Song calls for like a rap. And then, you know, then Drake comes out, and then it's like, oh, wow.
Everyone
is like a rapper, singer now. But that's not really the way because, I mean, there's been Andre 3000, there's like Lauryn Hill, and like,
it used to be corny to sing and rap.
Absolutely.
It was corny.
Absolutely.
And now it's become, it has to be part of your arsenal.
Right. It wouldn't be anything to see like some tatted up dude come in with chains and all that shit, get on the mic and be like, oh, I miss you.
Right, right.
Right. It's just like, whoa. And people be like, yo, that shit was hard.
Right. I don't see anything wrong with that.
I don't see anything wrong with it either. I'm just like, I was on my Lyft drive here.
Yeah.
Our driver was Bobby DeBarge Jr. So he was the son of
Chico DeBarge?
No, Bobby DeBarge.
Oh.
Who was in Switch.
Okay.
But
that's the Lyft driver?
He was a Lyft driver,
what?
Right?
So he's telling me, why are you snitching on him right now?
No, it's just all a matter of like perspective and stuff. It's like, you know, we're talking about how now, like, you could be.
How soon into the conversation did that come up that I'm Bobby DeBarge Jr.?
Not until like a couple blocks away from the studio.
Okay.
Like, because I don't like talking to Lyft drivers about my life.
Right.
You know, one, because I kind of live in a crazy neighborhood in L.A.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they always, so like the first question is like, how do you live here?
Right.
You know what I mean? What do you do for a living?
Right.
And then I say, well, I'm a musician.
Oh, are you on the radio?
Yo, and then it's like, then it's this whole conversation that I've had over and over and over and over and over again.
Right.
I'm just like, you probably never heard of me, but I'm doing okay, and like
right.
all this shit.
Right.
And so I just sort of like lied to him. You know what I mean? He's like, are you from LA? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, what do you do? And I was just like, oh, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And just moved on. Then we picked up another guy. And I'm telling a story. He's like, the guy's from Boston. And I'm like, yeah, you know, I was driving my tour bus in Boston, and there's a lot of low bridges that you can't drive on, and blah, 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 blah. So then once that guy gets out, the driver is like, oh, so you're in a tour bus. Like, what are you doing? That, by that time, I had already, like, spilt the beans.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, you know, I'm a musician, and, you know, I sing and rap. And he's like, oh, yeah, me too. I'm like a singer-songwriter, and, you know, it's it's going okay for me, but it's not anything compared to like my family.
Yeah.
And then we started talking, and then he felt comfortable enough. He was like, yeah, you know, I'm actually
a DeBarge.
He's like, have you heard of the DeBarges?
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah. And which is very strange because my uncle used to manage Switch like back in the day.
Oh, no way.
So then we started talking about like, oh, it's a small world. And I'm like, you know my uncle? And he's like, ah, I know that name and
yeah,
all that sort of shit. But we started talking. I'm like, yeah, you know, it's crazy. In this day and age, like you could be a Jewish albino rapper who only raps about melting Legos.
Right.
And you can find...
There's a market for that.
You can find your audience.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You can find the people who super fuck with that. Right. And then you can find the people who never heard of that, and they're just fascinated, and they're just like, this person's amazing. And right, then you can make your... You know, you can make your living off of that. But back in the day, you had to be like juggernauts, like the DeBarges and stuff to make a living
right
off of music. Like you were saying, Birdman paid his rappers in chains.
Right, totally.
I would love someone to try to give me a chain right now.
It's weird that we're talking about chains too, because I was just thinking, like when like Drake has this new line where he says, got so many chains, they call me Chaining Tatum. It's like the worst rap line of the year. But when I was listening to that today, I was like, that's so funny that like 10 years ago, like your chain was what was like the biggest piece of cultural relevancy.
Oh, man.
It went from like your chain was the most important thing to then it was your grill was the most important thing. And now it's like people are trying to strip it down a little bit. And I feel like chains are like... It's so 2000s.
Yeah, definitely. I still remember when Kanye got his first Rockefeller chain.
Right, or the Jesus piece.
Oh, man.
He used to always talk about the Jesus piece.
Oh, man.
Yeah. White rap fans?
Which I have a lot of white rap fans.
Do they want to talk to you a lot about like real hip-hop? Because those are some of the worst people at the show.
you know, I got more of that when I was signed to Green.
Yeah.
And I was rapping a lot more back then. Now it's like
you're kind of alt now. Like you have, I feel like you probably have alt fans. Like I feel like you're more, not to say that you're not hip hop, bro, but like your music appeals to like an indie audience.
So my fans are more like, it's not about like real hip hop. It's like real music.
Your fans are probably pretty like artsy, like a lot of graphic designers probably. Yeah,
graphic designers. I get... It's funny. I have two different like sets of fans.
Yeah.
So I have the fans from when I was signed with Green Lantern and when I was like doing stuff with like Cudi and stuff.
Right.
And then I have the fans that are of like my new era that are just all like, you know, that know about like the sleepover shows and stuff like that. And I can always tell that like the difference between those two because like, The old fans, they'll want to come up and they'll want to talk about like some real hip hop shit, which like, I know about. I grew up on hip hop and I'm like a student of hip hop.
Right.
You know, but it's not something that I personally like. I don't want to go to a show and listen to a guy rap a verse for 30 minutes long.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right,
and I'm not like listening to his bars and being like, oh, that's a crazy metaphor or, you know, whatever. Like, I want to see
energy.
I want to see a show. I want to hear music.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's like, I have like the young, real hip hop fan. I have the pothead, druggy fan. Then I have like hipster girl fans, and then I have like people who like listen to like NPR.
And if you're listening to the podcast on YouTube at this point, leave a YouTube comment telling
which
us
one you
which
are.
Johnny Polygon fan you are. Are you a graphic designer, a pothead, an NPR listener? What were the other ones? A stoner chick?
Yeah, stoner chick. Or have we spent the night in the same house together?
Or have you spent the night in the same house? Leave a comment. Let us know.
Yes.
Speaking on real quick, going back to what we were talking about as far as singing having to be part of your arsenal, and how it's not strange for like a tough tattooed dude to go in the booth and sing nowadays. I don't know where I'm going to go with this other than I find it interesting that, like, I like to work in singing to my songs now, too. And yeah. I know that I'm not a good singer, but we do enough, like, tweaking and layers to make it sound like I can sing a little bit.
Yeah.
But it's funny growing up in the age that we did where we're kind of like the oldest people that grew up with the internet pretty much our whole life.
Yeah.
So it's – when I write a hook, it's as equally influenced by, like – you know, Boys to Men or fucking TLC or H-Town as it is by like Blink 182 or
right.
Face to Face or something, you know what
right.
I'm saying? Where it's like this amalgamation of all the shit that I've listened to through my life. That's how I choose my melodies.
Right.
Whereas like, I think you get to do like, you know, like Future or like Rich Homie Quan or something. And there's like this certain undeniable like Southern flavor to their melodies where it's like, mm-hmm. you can hear the fact that they grew up probably going to a church or something and,
yeah.
and hearing the soul singing like
right.
that's so deeply ingrained in the way they write their melodies.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That was it. That's all I had about that idea.
No, yeah. I think it's a very interesting, interesting perspectively.
Thanks, buddy. Yeah, I mean, fuck.
Yeah.
It's always nice to do these because, like I said, I am a flake in real life. But
yeah, we get to catch up.
Yeah, we get to catch up, and it's nice to just have – I love when I get to do a repeat with someone that I actually – whose company I enjoy because the
nice.
Conversation gets to be a real conversation, and I don't have right. to learn about you. I just get to – like we get to talk about ideas instead of things.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay, so before we went off – so tangentially into like everything else, you were talking about your box set.
Yes.
So you're putting out a box set of every record since you were 16. That's 10 albums.
Yes. So that's 10 albums.
Can you listen to your albums from when you were 16 without cringing?
Whew. I can listen to parts.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like there's definite stages. There's like three albums and then it's like a new sound. It's like every album is a transition into who I am today.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? But then there's some things that are just really painful for me to listen to. But I think
because of the emotions or because it sucks in your head?
In my head, it's like the emotions, my delivery. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like for a while, it's like I had this very grand blah, 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 sort of like delivery to everything
right.
that I was saying. And I couldn't.
That was a style for a while.
Yeah. It's like I couldn't just say what I was talking about.
You had to be like theatrical.
Yeah. Like very theatrical. But I think it's all incredibly relevant. And, you know, again, talking about like the DeBarge driver or whatever, I was encouraging him to not sit on his music and to put it out. Cause I feel like you learn more about yourself when you put out your art than you do if you burn it and no one ever sees it or hears it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Cause like something that you hate personally that you can't stand is going to be somebody's favorite shit.
Yeah.
Period. Like someone has been searching high and low for that thing that you don't like about yourself. And that makes them feel invincible, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like I've had fans and listeners since I was 16, you know, because I started putting out my own music like in high school and stuff. Like I would get artwork and get it pressed up and shrink wrapped and barcoded and like all that sort of stuff. And I was just thinking the other day I saw someone talking about me and they were just like, yeah, up and comer Johnny Polygon,
right.
you know?
Right.
And instead of getting mad, I was just like, yo, I could literally put out a box set, you know, like the fucking Eagles
yeah.
right now. And it would be like complete bodies of work.
Right.
And then Shelly was like, yeah, you should do it.
Yeah.
And on top of that, you should put album commentary on every album, on every CD. And then we started to put together this.
How's
like,
the album commentary work? That's like at the end of the CD?
It's at the beginning.
That's at the beginning.
Yeah.
Okay.
So like the, like right at the top,
mm-hmm.
There's like an episode. It's, mm-hmm. it's a podcast. It's called Backstory.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically like an audio biography mm-hmm. of my life and just where I come from and what formed me into the person I am today. And there's also, like, there's stories about, you know, things that people ask me about. You know, there's stories about, like, me moving to California with $297.
Slanging them CDs on Venice.
Bam. Hollywood Boulevard.
I remember, bro. Yeah, I remember, man. The stories.
I love it.
You got good stories.
Yeah. And then there's, like, you know, and then there's stuff that's, like, more current, kind of juicier stuff, just like what my first deal was like and how I got signed, and then how, like, me and Cuddy met and the interactions between us, and then stuff between, like, me and Nas and Dead Prez. And
that's right, you've had a lot of like run-ins with,
it's
like,
crazy.
Yeah,
it's really, really crazy. And then, like, specifically, like, the Nas thing was very, like, super strange.
Yeah,
because, like, I'm not, like, a real hip hop. I mean, we were talking about real hip hop earlier.
Right.
Like, you don't get any more real hip hop than fucking Nas.
Right.
You know what I mean? And then, like, I just sort of, like, right place, right time, sort of just, like, ended up on his album. And then, like, we went on tour together and, like, all this shit. And so, like, that's all in the podcast. And, you know, just leaving my labels. And, you know, what's really strange about, strange and cool about the podcast is, like, I'm interviewing people from
the labels and stuff.
From the labels,
yeah.
And, you know, different artists and friends and stuff. And, you know, it's just crazy to see how many people you just, like, come in and out of your life and make a huge impact or no impact at all. And, like, when do you ever really sit down and say, like, thank you to somebody?
Totally.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's really been what's really cool about doing the podcast, is being able to, like, talk to people and be like, oh, you didn't know that you changed my life forever?
Right, totally. Well, totally.
Well, you did, and let me tell you, thank you, and blah, blah, blah. And also talking to people who, you know, have, like, I've had issues with, and, like, we aren't cool anymore, and, you know, just getting their take on things,
right,
and, like, giving them the platform to say, like, hey, you know, Johnny's an asshole. It's like, yeah, you like his music. Well, I think he's difficult to work with, and he never gave me back the CD that I loaned him, and I haven't been able to forgive him for that, you know?
Right, totally.
So it's like, yeah. So
it's been cathartic.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And it's also like, it's weird. It's like ripped open old wounds and then, like, healed them too, like, sealed them back up. And yeah. You know, and each episode is, like, about an era of my life, and they all took so much time and energy. Like, I've been working on this thing for, like, 6 months.
Yeah. When are you looking to be finished with it?
Like, literally in the next, like, week or two.
Nice.
Yeah.
How are people going to be, like, when do you think you, I mean, I hate making people announce release dates if they don't have one or because.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to get it out, like, within this month. My goal was
this month.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I'm literally, like,
the packaging is already designed and everything.
Yeah. I'm at the finish line.
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean?
Awesome.
So that's, like, my biggest, that's, like, my life's work.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I'm only doing, like, maybe, like, 200 copies of it.
Yeah.
You know, just, like, for all the super diehard listeners of mine. It's like, it's just like a must have sort of thing. And it also give them, like, a new perspective, because, like, I don't make music about the business side of things.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's like, I think it will be interesting for people to, like, be able to hear
the conversations about the business
side. Yeah. And then, like, listen to the music and be like, wow. So he wrote this whole album in illegal limbo,
right?
Not knowing that this shit was ever gonna come out, and
right,
you know, all this sort of thing. And,
oh,
like,
Limo Sex Superstar was, like, a fake album that he made up the name on the spot at a Mocksteady interview.
Exactly.
You gonna call me up and have me?
Exactly.
You gonna interview me about that one?
Exactly. I really should, though, because, I mean, Mocksteady and Kinda Neat is, like, all these, like, internet performances, like,
we've become intertwined because of that.
These things, like, they follow me around. Like, there'll be people who will, like, chase me down in the street, and they'll be like, oh, shit, I saw you on fucking Kinda Neat, blah, 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 dead meat, blah, blah, blah.
I mean, that gave me spine tingles. That's, like, you know, that's what it's all.
Dude, it literally happens to me all the time.
That's so tight.
All the time. Knock Steady was definitely the first.
Yeah.
The first thing that did. I didn't. I had no idea. Like I'm not an internet numbers guy.
Yeah.
You know right. what I mean? So it's
I
like,
didn't really know. I mean, you know, honestly, all praises due to Jonathan. Dumbfounded was the one who put me on to you. Right. And I was like, oh, this is dope.
Yeah.
Because he was just like, oh, yeah, it's just like, I don't know, some dude. We follow each other on Twitter. And at the time, it was like.
I thought it was Watsky.
I think maybe Watsky might have told Dumbfounded or something. But,
okay.
But you. No, I think we found out that we knew George when you came
at
in.
Thing.
At the
right.
thing.
Because me and Watsky, we did.
It was just you and Dumbfounded had been DMing each other or something.
Wow, right.
And it was like at the time, I don't know, Twitter was like not that old. And so having
yeah.
like 15,000 or 20,000 Twitter followers, I was like, oh, whoa, that's big.
Right.
Let's have him on the show. And then the music was dies.
Right. I've never had that many followers.
So. Well, however many you have.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
Oh, it seems important.
Yeah. To I've me, had like 8,000 followers
to me,
for like
it
10 years.
Important. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm glad, you know, it was all serendipitous and I'm glad that it took place because
right.
here we are. We're fucking podcast amigos.
Yeah, buddy. Yeah. So, yeah. So the box set, finishing that up and getting that out and the release date will be coming extremely, extremely soon.
For sure, man.
And it's only my life's work.
You're like,
all.
Well, it's only half your life so far.
Yeah.
You know, or a third of it.
Right.
You still got another good 30 or 40, 50 years maybe.
Definitely. Definitely.
So,
yeah.
Are you working on new stuff too, I'd imagine?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Always. Yeah,
that's good.
Always and forever.
That's good, man.
Yeah.
That's good. Yeah, I'm happy for you. I'm glad that I always really like to talk to someone who has a history within it, who has just like stuck with it and continued
yeah.
to do what they do because they love it.
I don't have shit else to do.
And like, because that's the thing is, I think you and I are both at a mature enough age to be like, okay, the quote unquote might never happen.
Right.
But as long as I can stay happy doing it,
right.
it's great. And if it does, it does. But I'm not counting on it anymore.
Like, for me, it's
when
like,
I was a kid, I was like, it's going to happen.
Right.
You know?
For me, it's like, it's already happened.
It has happened. And that's
you
what,
know what
we,
I mean?
We forget to think about that.
Yeah. Like, for me, it's like, I'm thinking, okay, have I been on MTV?
Right.
Yes.
And I didn't mean that to sound belittling.
No. Yeah. Not at all. I just think this is like this is my actual perspective.
Right,
you know,
right,
it's
right.
like I've met all of my heroes.
Totally.
I've worked with them.
Yeah.
And I've like shared stages with them.
Traveled,
like, you know, all that shit. They've like thrown me on their albums and
yeah.
and then I think, okay, so everything I wanted to accomplish I've already done.
Yeah.
So like now I have to like accomplish new stuff. Like I'd like the goal isn't to get to as many people as possible.
Yeah.
It's like to do the like to actually achieve like the ultimate expression. And I think that's just going to take me for the rest of my life to
right.
do. And if I can make a living at trying to do that.
And you're finding interesting ways to get to that expression. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Coming up with an idea like a sleepover show is as important as coming up with a great song. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like those tap into the same part of the brain.
Right.
It's all creativity.
Right.
And so anyway, the point I was trying to make is that it stokes me out when like I meet somebody else who's been through the shits and has come out the other end okay.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We're okay. And
yeah.
We're doing it.
Yeah.
Whether we realize it or not, like it's happening. So
fuck yeah, man.
Yeah, man. It's cool. Where can the people find you online?
You can find me on Twitter at Johnny Polygon.
JOHNNY Polygon, POLYGON.
Yep. Yep. And, then the Instagram is Sir John Paul, SIRJOHNPOL. And I think that's all my social media. Maybe Facebook.
You can Google you. Johnny Polygon's pretty SEO friendly.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
you'll be able to find like what a pre-order or the link to order the box set pretty soon.
Yeah. And that'll be on my website, which is johntourage.us. And
John Tourage. How do you spell that?
JOHNTOURAGE.
There you go.
.us. And yeah. And then, you know, always working on new music. And, you know, videos and all that sort of stuff, man. Just trying to find the people who give a fuck.
Hell yeah. And so if you give a fuck, go follow him. Go
Boom.
Buy that box set.
Boom.
And if you give a fuck about us, that's what we call a segue in the industry. If you give a fuck about us, remember that we are running a Patreon pledge. So if you are a loyal listener, not someone who's finding out about the podcast for the first time because of the YouTube channel, though if you are just finding out about the podcast because of the YouTube channel, welcome. I appreciate you guys listening. If you are a loyal listener, go to patreon.com/kindaneat. That's P-A-T-R-E-O-N, and pledge $1 an episode. That's all we're asking for, or two or three or whatever. Don't pledge 10. That's too much. People keep pledging $10 per episode, and then I send an email going, look, man, are you sure? That means you're going to be paying $40 a month. I don't want to do that to you. That's way more than an HBO Go account. So just do $1 a month. That's $4 a month. And that will help us more than you can ever imagine. It pays the bills around here, and it helps Ben and I IRL. Also, follow me on Twitter at It's Intuition. Follow my man behind the boards making the shit sound buttery, Ben Shim at I Am Database, base with two S's.
Whoop.
Shout out, Ben.
Yeah. And follow follow my manager / amazing girlfriend at Communist Spy.
At Communist Spy.
Yeah, she does all my videos and came up. And executes all the ideas, like the sleepover shows and the box sets and the podcasts and all that stuff.
Follow that woman. Follow us as a unit at Kinda Neat. YouTube.com/KindaNeat, where you're going to see Johnny performing a new song that he's excited about.
Yeah.
What's it called?
It's called Just Seeing Things.
Just Seeing Things. You guys are going to be just seeing those things on the YouTubes at YouTube.com/KindaNeat. And what else? Everything in a pretty package at KindaNeat.net. Go to the App Store, download the podcast app, search for Kinda Neat, and subscribe. That helps us get into the iTunes charts, which helps more people see the podcast. And that is just amazing when that happens. So thank you guys so much for tuning in. My name is Lee. This is my man, Johnny Polygon.
That's me.
And this was Kinda Neat.
Thanks, guys.